Good morning and welcome to Greater Good. This is your volunteer programmer, Barbara Felix, from the Sun Sounds of Arizona Studios. The Greater Good Science Center studies the psychology, sociology, and neuroscience of well-being and teaches skills that foster a thriving, resilient, and compassionate society. And now, some articles from Greater Good. How to find support in difficult times. When we experience rough roads ahead, finding others to support us can make all the difference. By Beth Kurland, August 4th, 2025. Back in the day, when I used to run triathlons, I discovered something powerful that helped me get through in the face of physical challenge. It wasn't just my training, but the encouragement from the spectators and the other racers that helped me to find stamina to keep going. The energy from those around me gave me the strength to do something that would otherwise have seemed nearly daunting. As I've gotten older, I've found that this is true for emotional challenges as well. Many of us are going through hard things right now. The news is tough to read, as perhaps it usually is. On a personal note, as I write this, I'm grappling with the significant and sudden deterioration of my dad's health over these past 2 months and the uncertainty of the coming days and weeks. When I was running on my favorite road the other day, I saw a sign that said, "Caution, rough road, pass at your own risk." And I thought, yeah, that sounds about right. Sometimes this sure isn't easy. Our first inclination when confronted with challenges may be fight, flight, freeze. That's what our innate stress response does to try and protect us in the face of threat. Understandably, we might feel anxious, fearful, overwhelmed, or shut down in the face of big challenges. In that state, we may feel driven to hide from people. But we are also wired for social connection. It's as much a part of our evolutionary inheritance as our fight-flight response. Yet often, too often, many of us feel disconnected or like we are going it alone. We may lose access to what I think of as our thriving circuits, our social engagement system, that allow us to feel connection with others and to experience support, compassion, and care to help us through tough times. Sometimes this is because our old conditioned beliefs get in the way. We think that it's not okay to ask for help. We think it's weak to show certain emotions to others. We think we need to have it all together because everyone else does, even though they don't, by the way. We think we should be able to do it on our own. We think being strong means not crying, losing it, or falling apart in front of others, or at all. We don't want to burden anyone or drag them down with our difficulties. The truth is, we thrive best together, and we need one another. Research consistently shows that people with strong social connections and social support are not only happier and healthier, but also more resilient in the face of stress and change. What is even more fascinating is how science is beginning to explain why we feel this way. Research from the HeartMath Institute has shown that our bodies pick up on the electromagnetic field of information that radiates from another's heart. If someone in our presence is in a state of care or compassion, our own heart can detect such signals, and this helps our heart rhythms to become more synchronized and coherent. This means that simply being with supportive people can help shift our nervous system in positive ways that support our well-being. Similarly, polyvagal theory explains that our nervous systems have the capacity to co-regulate with one another, meaning that one person's nervous system, broadcasting cues of safety, can help to turn down the threat response in another person's nervous system. The calm or compassion of someone nearby, detected through tone of voice, facial expressions, body language, etc., can help us feel safer and more balanced, not only on an emotional level, but on a physiological one, by shifting our nervous system to a state of more regulation. When our nervous system is in a state of greater balance and regulation, we have access to more inner resources to help us meet psychological challenges. We can see a bigger picture, have more perspective, access more intuitive guidance, and experience renewing emotions such as care, self-compassion, and gratitude. So, what do we do about beliefs that many of us carry, that it's not okay to ask for help, or that we're a burden to others, or other such beliefs that might get in the way of seeking support or connection with others? Stanford social psychologist Zhuan Zhao shares research that shows how we tend to underestimate the willingness of others to want to help, and we tend to overestimate the ways that others will feel inconvenienced. Those facts can help counter our tendencies to keep others out or go it alone. The truth is, acts of kindness often benefit the ones helping by improving their states of well-being. So it can be beneficial to remind ourselves that by letting others in, we may be helping them as much as they are helping us. Here are some additional things that may be helpful. Number one, first, identify if any old beliefs might be getting in the way of you seeking social support, allowing others in, asking for help, or letting others know what you need. Recognize that many beliefs we carry around with us, as if their absolute truth, are often inaccurate, distorted, or no longer serving us. Recognize thoughts are not facts. Be willing to loosen the grip and ask, is it really true? And then consider what new beliefs might best support your well-being at this point in your life. Two, beware of wishing others to read your mind. It can be common to think, he should know what I need. I shouldn't have to ask. This is a trap I see many people fall into. Sometimes people do intuitively know what we need, but sometimes they need a little guidance from us. Most often, people want to help and be there for us, but they can't always read our minds. Experiment and see what happens when you are willing to let others in on your needs and how they can best support you. Three, identify from where you get the most social support and nourishment. For some people, this might come from being connected to their community in some way, perhaps a church, synagogue, or support group. For others, it might come in the form of gathering with a group of friends or having one-to-one time with an intimate partner, family member, or friend. Some people, feeling connection and interconnection with the natural world through nature can be an important source of comfort. Whatever nourishes you, see if you might seek this out. This can be easier said than done because when we are already struggling, it may feel hard to find the energy or motivation to engage, and it may feel easier to avoid such activities. But a little self-nudging can often have a big payoff. Research suggests that intentionally seeking activities we find positive or meaningful that we might otherwise avoid can not only decrease depressive symptoms, but also improve well-being for both those suffering from depression as well as the general population. As I'm writing this, I'm uncertain of what the coming days will bring for my dad and our family. But as he has always emphasized, family and connection are everything. Whether that be our biological families or family of friends or our community around us. What I am certain of is this: whatever happens, I will get through it because of the care of others standing by my side, reminding me I am not alone. About the author. Beth Kurland, PhD, is a clinical psychologist, public speaker, and author of 4 books, including You Don't Have to Change to Change Everything, 6 Ways to Shift Your Vantage Point, Stop Striving for Happy, and Find True Well-Being, and Dancing on the Tightrope, Transcending the Habits of Your Mind and Awakening to Your Fullest Life. Beth has been in clinical practice since 1994 and provides evidence-based treatment to people across the lifespan with a focus on using mindfulness and mind-body strategies. To enjoy free meditations and other resources, visit Beth, B-E-T-H, Kurland, KURLAND.com. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, bringing you Greater Good Magazine. How does retirement affect our health and happiness? A review of research investigated how mental health and physical activity change in retirees around the world, by Kira M. Newman, July 30th, 2025. While becoming unemployed can be a huge mental health challenge, many of us assume that retirement, which also involves stopping or at least reducing work, will be the opposite. It's pictured as a well-deserved time of leisure and relaxation when we'll get to do all of the things we always wished we had time for. But is retirement as blissful as it might seem? A paper published this year reviewed 15 other reviews of past retirement research to provide the most updated and comprehensive summary of the available evidence on the effects of retirement on health, both mental and physical. Giacomo Pietro Vegisi of the University of Pavia in Italy and his colleagues drew from studies across the world, including the U.S., China, Brazil, India, Russia, Nigeria, and many other countries. I'm sorry, Nigeria, and many other countries. The big picture appears to be somewhat mixed. While a 2021 study found that people are prone to depressive symptoms in retirement, another 2021 study suggested that retirement actually reduces our risk of depression by about 20%. But going deeper, they found that the effects of retirement tend to depend on a variety of factors. The nature of the job from which you are retiring, your own health and responsibilities, and your socioeconomic status, with better-off retirees seeking improvements in different aspects of their health, and worse-off retirees at risk for declines. It's also the case that different societies have a variety of attitudes toward work and elderhood, which can shape well-being after retirement. These findings point the way toward better personal choices for ourselves as individuals in retirement, and they suggest that we need policies that will support retirees across the economic spectrum. Health and well-being in retirement. In reviewing the findings from all of the research they surveyed, Vigizi and his colleagues observed that socioeconomic status seemed to play a role in mental health after retirement. One 2018 study found that mental health improved in retirees with high socioeconomic status, but declined in those who retired on less money. The job you're leaving also has an impact on mental health after retirement. People leaving stressful jobs may be the ones who see their mental health improve, according to a 2013 study. This seems to be particularly the case for men. Do we become more or less active after retirement? Another marker of health. Jobs and wealth mattered here as well. All the reviews found that people with high socioeconomic status became more physically active. Although retirees were doing less physical activity for a job or during a commute, they had more time for recreation, exercise, and leisure. This wasn't the case for people with low socioeconomic status, who often showed declines in physical activity. There may be various reasons for this, the researchers explain. Gym memberships and home exercise equipment cost money, and people who are worse off financially may live in areas with less convenient access to parks and other safe spaces to exercise. They may have less time to exercise due to caregiving or other responsibilities, or simply not place that much value on it. This makes people with low socioeconomic status at risk of rising sedentary behavior in retirement, like reading and watching TV. TV watching tends to increase for everyone after they retire, but even more so for those who are less well off. And the physical affects the mental. The more older adults engage in active leisure and physical activity, the better their mental health. The more sedentary they are, the less satisfied they tend to be with life. The researchers also looked at the risk of cognitive decline and death after retirement, but there were no consistent patterns. One complication is that people often retire due to concerns around health and aging. So, in effect, their health problems cause their retirement and not the other way around. Diet, smoking, and alcohol use also showed no clear patterns among retirees. The current study didn't capture what retirement looks like in low-income countries, and some of the findings dated back to as early as 1966. So retirement may be an even more complicated picture in today's world. Everyone's retirement is different. So much of the research on retirement is conflicting, and it makes sense if we consider how different retirement can be for different people, the researchers explain. First off, we come into retirement from different job situations. For some, retirement means finally leaving a stressful, back-breaking job. For others, retirement may also entail the loss of daily routines, physical and mental activity, sense of identity and purpose, social interactions and connections, and reduction in income, the researchers explain. We can retire because we are forced to, because we've reached retirement age in our country, or because we need to care for partners, parents, or grandchildren. Sometimes retirement is planned months or years in advance. Other times, it happens abruptly. Culture matters too. While the practice of retirement may be common in Western countries, this isn't the case everywhere. So elders who stop work may not receive the same social recognition or status. Depending on government policy in our country, retirement may mean more or less financial support from social programs like pensions. Needless to say, retirees come with all sorts of living situations and habits. They may have a spouse who still works or live alone. If they find themselves with free time, they may choose to fill it with healthy or not so healthy behaviors. The researchers suggest that future retirement studies should try to take into account more of these factors to tease out their influence, and that government policies should help promote exercise, mental health, social activity for elders, both before and after retirement. Policy interventions should be tailored to address the specific needs of retirees, particularly those from lower socioeconomic groups who are more likely to experience adverse health outcomes after retirement, write Vigizi and his colleagues. Retirement is something we can prepare for both as individuals and as societies to support ourselves and each other as we adjust financially, mentally, and socially to what can be a monumental life transition. About the author. Kira M. Newman is the managing editor of Greater Good. Her work has been published in outlets including The Washington Post, Mindful Magazine, Social Media Monthly, and Tech.co. She is the co-author of the forthcoming The Science of Happiness Workbook and co-editor of The Gratitude Project. You have been listening to Greater Good Magazine, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. And we have a little bit of time left, and I want to just read a list from Greater Good Magazine of the keys to well-being. And here's your list. Awe, bridging differences, compassion, diversity, empathy, forgiveness, gratitude, happiness, intellectual humility, mindfulness, purpose, social connection, and love. This is your volunteer programmer, Barbara Felix, from the Sun Sounds of Arizona studios, thanking you so much for listening today, and I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your day. And now, stay tuned for more interesting programming coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.